Athletic.
Right, Reds, Tony Evans here at Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Centuries up for Mo and Alisson as Liverpool make it six on the bounce. I'm here with James Pearce and Andy Jones. We'll get into the chase for Champions League football, get the lowdown on the man the Reds want as sporting director and more. But first, those three words. Andy, I'm going to give it to you this week.
To be honest, I've got many words about Anthony Taylor's performance at the weekend, but I'll keep them to myself just in case the FA are listening. don't want any fines coming my way. But I think I'll go with putting pressure on.
Putting pressure on, well, yeah. It's an Manchester United didn't seem to respond very well to the pressure, did they? James, your three words.
Salah the machine.
Nah, that works for me. Let's see what they're saying on the Walk On podcast Facebook group. Jay Murphy, winning is winning. Jane Stacey, coronation for Salah. Rob Mills, go you Hammers. Steve Riley, three more wins. I was a little bit underwhelmed by the performance. But, you know, I mean, you've got to say, any winning run's a good winning run, hasn't it? You know, so what would my three words be? Just keep winning.
To join our community of listeners on Facebook, just search Walk On Podcast and join the group.
Fabinho, Van Dijk, Salah, in!
Okay, the Reds are on the march. Are we convinced? Do these underwhelming performances matter, James?
No. I think when you've been when you've been producing the kind of performances that Liverpool did for so much of this season, you can't be turning your nose up at the manner of victories, especially at the back end of the season when it just is all about getting the job done. And finally, there is some momentum there. And you're right, it's not like suddenly everything's clicked and you go, wow, you know, Liverpool are back. It's not that, is it? But then I don't think anyone seriously thought that was possible anyway. We know that there's some major surgery needed to that squad in the summer. Klopp, to his credit, has rejigged things tactically and found a way to get Liverpool going again, and especially to get Trent Alexander-Arnold going again. And they do look, you know, more resilient as well than they have done for so much of this season. And together, really, the last two games certainly won't live long in the memory banks, those visits of Fulham and Brentford. But two wins, two clean sheets, and Saturday for me was a dreadful game, like hampered by Anthony Taylor's refereeing. But also, you've got to give Liverpool a lot of credit for how they defended, because you know there were so many set pieces, but Alisson was very rarely troubled.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been brilliant, hasn't he? But Salah, Andy, you know, the goal, he's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's our king, isn't he? And that's the thing you need in these times when, you know, it's not all clicking and you're trying to find your way through games. This is when you need your best players to be stepping up. And we've seen that with Trent in terms of his assist numbers and his ability to dominate the game. And then you've got Mo, who's, you know, who's just scoring every time he, particularly at Anfield, every time he steps on the pitch. It's nine and on the bounce now, isn't it, where he scored at Anfield. It's about being in the right place at the right time. And, you know, he's just got that knack to be able to, no matter what, just keep scoring goals and keep breaking records.
I love scruffy goals. His first touch, you know, yeah, he's blowing it, and then the second touch, I love that.
Yeah, as long as it does go in on that second touch. I mean, like, Cody Gakpo was finishing the second half when he did a bit of defending for Brentford. there was some similarity to that a little bit, wasn't there, with Salah's first touch. But now he recovered and he's just got that, you know, that quick turn of pace, hasn't he, to just get in front of, get first to balls like that, and then just turn them home. And yeah, you just need your big players to step up in those moments where you are struggling a little bit. And yeah, and he's proven the match winner again.
Yeah, we must mention here that the booing of the national anthem and the singing through it, well, we don't need to talk too much about it. We talked an awful lot about it on last Thursday's pod, and if go and listen to that, we explain the reasons for it. And in fact, there's a transcript of it on the Athletic Liverpool feed on the website. So go and do that, have a listen. But yeah, it happens and it will continue to happen. And as I say, if you need to learn about it, last Thursday's pod is the place to go. Well, the bigger thing is, the more important thing than the coronation is Liverpool's accession to the Champions League. James, is that going to happen?
Well, I think a week ago, I think we were talking about it and we said, I think I said, oh, it must be like a 5% chance or something. I think that's probably crept up to about 15, maybe even 20%, maybe. There's a little bit of hope, isn't there? As we said, like Liverpool just had to try and get to 71 points. We know that, you know, you look back over the last 4 or 5 years and traditionally that has been enough. It didn't look like 71 would be enough, and I'm still not convinced that it will be. But yeah, this winning streak has just cranked up a bit of pressure, hasn't it? Where it didn't look as if that was going to be possible because there was just so much ground to make up. And then with the results going Liverpool's way on Sunday, you do just suddenly think, well, hang on a minute. There is a race where it didn't look like there was one. And then you look at the remaining fixtures. I would still expect Man United to finish ahead of Liverpool just because of the fixtures, really. Like as bad as they've been away from home consistently, you know, they've got Wolves at home, Chelsea at home, Fulham at home, and they win all three, then Liverpool can't finish above them. So you need a bit of an implosion there. And then Newcastle's their fixtures are interesting because I think they got Leeds away, which, you know, that is a huge, huge game for Leeds United. And then I think they've got Brighton and Leicester visiting St James's. So it's just made it interesting, hasn't it? I don't think it's anything more than that at the minute.
Yeah. Well, how sweet would it be, Andy, to leapfrog Manchester United? That would be that would be a summer gift to us all, wouldn't it?
I know, yeah. It would be brilliant because when you compare sort of how the opinion of the two different seasons. So Liverpool have had one of the worst for years, and then United and Ten Hag have been widely praised, I'd say, for, you know, the job he was doing and how he turned it around and how United were looking so comfortable of making top four and have obviously won a cup as well. So then to pip them would be just really funny, I think, more than anything else. And it would make all of the downs we've had this season all seem worth it.
For me, James, the big worry is that Brighton will come from behind and pass us.
Yeah. You certainly can't discount that especially when you look at the manner in which they played and ultimately beat Man United dramatically the other day. So yeah, Liverpool have just got to keep going, haven't they? I think that Liverpool have got their work out, just making sure that they get to 71 points because, you know, that the King Power is going to be bouncing next Monday night with, you know, that's such a big game for Leicester City in terms of their survival bid. And as we said, Liverpool are on this 6-match winning run, but, you know, it hasn't been completely convincing. I still think Leicester away could be tricky. You know, Villa at home, you'd expect Liverpool to get the job done, especially Villa seem to have just gone off the boil a little bit the last week or two. And then Southampton away on the last day, barring a miracle, Southampton will be relegated by then. So, yeah, it's just made it interesting, hasn't it? It was funny because I was speaking to someone on Saturday saying, you know, this will be the first season under Klopp where Liverpool haven't had anything riding on the final day because it just felt like the season was petering out and that, yeah, it was great that they generated a bit of momentum, but it was more about positivity going into the summer than actually salvaging something important from the season. But now you think, well, maybe that trip to the South Coast for Southampton away on the last day might be a bit more interesting than I thought.
Andy, I mean, Everton got a draw at Leicester. We should beat Leicester. And do we really want to do the Blues a favour?
Well, yeah, again, it goes back to that question, doesn't it? Do you want a Merseyside derby next season? Some would say, you know, do you want 6 points next season? But, you know, the derby's, you know, it's one of them games that you always look for, isn't it? So it's whether you wouldn't mind the season off that, and who knows, maybe a few seasons, depending on what Everton's fortunes were if they were to go down. But I think Leicester's a really interesting one because Everton could have scored about 5 or 6. And for a Sean Dyche side to have nearly scored 5 or 6 in a game is pretty impressive. I mean, I watched them for 3 years and they scored 4 once, I think, but never really looked like 5s or 6s. And it was it was down to Leicester's goalie really that sort of prevented it. So there's going to be opportunity, you know, Leicester are defensively are wide open, so that, you know, Liverpool have got, should, with their attacking firepower they've got at the moment, you know, have, you know, create plenty of opportunities. But yeah, it's one of those games, isn't it, at the end of the season, where results, you can sort, any sort of form you can sort of put out the window when it comes to these types of games, when it's a team down the bottom, because they can produce anything at any point.
Yeah, we're a bit wide open at the back as well, aren't we, at times? Alisson, James, player of the year, without a doubt. Saved us so many times. In fact, he is this unbeaten run, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been absolutely immense, hasn't he? In a season when, you know, so many key personnel have endured kind of personal crises in terms of their form, he has absolutely stood tall. And, you know, where would Liverpool have been without him? And you think, you know, not so much actually in recent weeks, but obviously earlier on in the season, exposed so often, like, because Liverpool have just been so open. The lack of protection afforded to him. And I think, you know, the Opta stats show that he's, was it 9 or 10 goals? I think they think Liverpool should have conceded probably more than they have done. And that's obviously down to his heroics. And yeah, it was interesting speaking to Virgil van Dijk about him after the game on the weekend. And he was talking about, you know, this presence that he has and how, yeah, you admire his qualities as a goalkeeper, but having him behind you on the pitch, he was saying, you know, it's that presence in terms of that trust factor, that you know you've got someone who can bail the team out when needed, and talked about how important he is in terms of how good he is with his feet, in terms of building attacks. And we've seen that time and time again. And he said, you know, behind the scenes, you know, he's a real leader in terms of setting the example for others to follow on a daily basis. So, he's just been incredible, hasn't he? And, you know, to get to 100 clean sheets, and it was a nice moment, obviously, Klopp did a presentation to him in the dressing room after, giving him a shirt with 100 and his name on the back. And looking forward to seeing him keep the next 100.
Yeah, he's been one of the great, great goalkeepers in Liverpool's history. And we've had plenty of top-class goalkeepers. But he is something special, isn't he, Andy?
He is, yeah. It's, you know, his ability to, as James mentioned, that, you know, with his feet for one, but also, you know, and we touched on sort of his, I think in the past, his one-on-one ability to make himself so big, to look like the favourite in those situations when goalkeepers, you know, should never be the favourite when it's one-on-one and a player's running through. And Klopp said after the Fulham game, didn't he, that, you know, Alisson was quite emotional that he'd finally kept the clean sheet and close to tears, I think he said. And I think some of Liverpool's defending has sort of brought all of us close to tears at times this season because of how bad it's been. But, you know, it was really good. You know, it is good for him to, because they mean so much to goalkeepers, those clean sheets, don't they? They are as much as goal scorers scoring goals. And yeah, it's good to see Liverpool getting things right on that end of the pitch. It's still not perfect, but when you've got someone like him in goal, it doesn't half make it easier to be close to perfect.
Tony Evans here with Walk On, your Liverpool podcast from The Athletic, along with James Pearce. And it's a pleasure to welcome The Athletic's German football expert, Raphael Honigstein, to the pod. Rafa, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Tony. How are you?
Oh, well, good, all good. Even better for seeing you. It's, well, I think the first thing we need to talk about, obviously, is Jörg Schmatke. Have I pronounced that right?
Schmatke. Close enough, Tony.
Yeah. Well, as you know, there is an injunction forbidding me for attempting to pronounce foreign names. But he's the man that the Reds are in talks with to replace Julian Ward as sporting director. Come on, Rafa, tell us about him.
So Jörg Schmatke is what's known as a child of the Bundesliga, someone who's been around for so long that he's become part of the fabric of German football. He was a player at Fortuna Düsseldorf and Freiburg, and then in 2001, he became sporting director at Alemannia Aachen, the second division. Really successful, took them up to all the way to the Europa League or UEFA Cup at the time, then repeated the trick at Hannover and Köln, and finished his stint at Wolfsburg, who were relegation battlers when he came in, and he took them back into the Champions League. So success wherever he's been, not necessarily at the highest level, but at a decent level in German football, hugely experienced, but also known for having a huge public profile, which at times was almost sort of comically bad-tempered. I think it was a bit of an act, a bit of a persona that he adopted. But I think it explains why in Germany a lot of people were quite incredulous when they heard that Schmadtke would be considered for the sporting director job at Liverpool, because he, I think, is seen as slightly old school and a bit of a traditionalist, which we don't really associate with Liverpool when it comes to their transfer market. But Klopp obviously has seen something in him that he likes. I'm sure that it would have been his suggestion. They clearly have some kind of relationship, although they've never worked together. There's links through Mark Korsika, the agent of Jurgen Klopp, who is also the agent for Florian Kohfeldt, who was a coach working underneath Schmadtke at Wolfsburg. So they would have got to know each other quite well if they didn't before. And he obviously feels that this is the kind of person who will help him at a moment when Liverpool are a little bit thin when it comes to expertise in the transfer market.
Obviously, they need a replacement. There's been chaos in the recruitment area, and this is a really crucial role. James, did it come out of the blue to you?
Yeah, it certainly did. Yeah, he's certainly not a name that I'd heard mentioned regarding that vacancy. It's an interesting one. I asked Klopp about the search for a new sporting director a couple of weeks ago, because, you know, when you think it has been a long, drawn out process, when you consider that, you know, it was November when Julian Ward handed in his notice, obviously the fact that he was staying in the post until the end of the season, not going on gardening leave, meant, you know, they had time to ensure they got the right person through the door. But of course, with the clock ticking and that summer transfer window being so important for the club, you're thinking, well, they need to do something and pretty fast. And I know senior figures at the club have said, you know, there's no rush because, you know, Mike Gordon, the FSG president, is now back very much hands-on again. You know, Dave Fallows and Barry Hunt are the two kind of chief scouts, play a part in negotiations as well. But you still need that sporting director at the top of it all. Because even Klopp himself, when I asked him about it, he said, you know, it's not something that he wants to take on. He doesn't want to be dealing with agents on a daily basis. He doesn't want to be negotiating, whether that's transfer deals or contract renewals. And obviously that sporting director is a key link between all the different departments, you know, the sports science, the medical, the fitness department. So, you know, knitting it all together. So, I know Liverpool at the minute have stressed it's just discussions with this guy and not a firm agreement in place. But, yeah, he's certainly the front runner and a pretty surprised front runner at that.
Yeah, Rafa, I read somewhere that him and Klopp share a taste in music, heavy metal bands. But the big question, the more important question is he going to fit in with the data-driven approach that has been a huge part of Fenway Sports Group's strategy?
Well, the Totenhausen is apparently the band that links them, and I don't think they can be really described as heavy metal, more light to medium metal, as far as rock is concerned. Does he fit in with a strategy? It's not easy to say, easy to answer, because he has been very good when it comes to identifying talent that isn't necessarily the obvious person to buy. So he has been smart. He has been written about in the book by a colleague of mine, Christoph Biermann, called Football Hackers, who looked at Mavericks doing things differently. And he felt that Schmadtke is sufficiently different to warrant that kind of angle, if you will. So he's not, despite his age and despite being around for a long time, he's not somebody who will just buy players because he happens to know the agent or seen a DVD that he likes. He is quite conscientious, and his son worked as a head scout at Wolfsburg. Maybe he will be involved as well at Liverpool. We'll have to find out if this indeed comes to pass. So I don't see why he wouldn't fit in. Where I think I have more doubt as far as the fit is concerned is whether he can be the person knitting it all together. I see him more, unlike his role in Germany, where he was really the managing director for everything football related, I think this could be more targeted. This could be more confined to the transfer market, to helping Klopp and the existing regime with the stuff that's perhaps not functioning quite so well at the moment when it comes to negotiating, etc. I think it'd be harder for him as a German coming in and linking all these different departments together from scratch nearly. So maybe they'll still be looking at somebody who can do that job then maybe doesn't entail all the transfer dealings. That for me would be more logical, but we'll have to see how it shakes out.
Well, he appears to be a combustible character. How do you see that working with Klopp, who is, can be a little bit excitable at times?
Yeah, that's going to be one of the interesting things to see. Even the coaches that he did get along with well, they had huge clashes because he is very forthright and he has certain opinions. And also the power dynamic is different in Germany. In Germany, sporting directors, they run the club and they hire and fire managers. Here in the Premier League, you have sporting directors, but they almost sort of come as part of the management team. And often the manager is there first and then a sporting director gets hired that works with the manager. So because the sporting director in Germany is the most powerful figure, he was in a position to criticize managers publicly, to disagree with them, to have often different views. Managers, by definition, have more of a short-term view on a transfer market. They need people immediately. They don't really care how much it costs. They don't really care what it means 5 years down the line when they're no longer there. But sporting directors in Germany take a much more strategic view. And very often, his view and the coach's view didn't align. And he was very forthright and very open about making these conflicts quite public. And I'm sure that Klopp doesn't go into this blindly and will understand that there will probably be some degree of fighting and conflict. But the same, it must be said, happened with Klopp and other people that you work with in Germany, including Zarko Buvac, who, until he departed for the best part of 15 years, was always somebody that he would also spar with, you know, and have very frank and loud exchanges at times. So I think Klopp isn't shy to work in that manner. But ideally, of course, you want a slightly smoother process.
Challenger managers is a good thing, I think, James. And there's been a little bit of a feeling, hasn't there, that too much power has been centred on Klopp and it needs to be taken off and to release a little bit of the pressure.
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything wrong with a bit of friction, is there? I think that was why the dynamic worked so well between Klopp and Michael Edwards, because Michael Edwards quite often would say no. Like, it wasn't, it was never kind of a yes man situation where it was like, you know, Klopp just tells him what to do and he goes and does it. And that was, you know, they weren't particularly close. They wouldn't socialize kind of away from Melwood, it was at the time, I guess, and then the AXA. But the dynamic worked really well between them. And, you know, for example, you know, an example, you know, Gini Wijnaldum would have probably got the new contract that he wanted if that had been down solely to Klopp. But it was Michael Edwards was like, well, no, this does not make sense for the club. And so you need a strong personality. I look upon that as a good thing if Schmadke is the guy to come in, because you know, that's all part of a robust decision making process, that people make their voices heard, and you know, and people are able to voice their opinions. And so, yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I mean, I've got a question for Rafa. I mean, Rafa, a lot of Liverpool fans I've seen reacting to it have kind of maybe turned their nose up a little bit at the list of clubs he's worked at previously, because it, you know, you wouldn't say any of them are anywhere near Liverpool's level. And of course, you know, we're talking about a sporting director coming in and, you know, potentially negotiating 60, 70, 80 million pound deals this summer. Would that concern you at all?
I wouldn't call it a concern, but of course it is something new for him. He hasn't worked at that level before. He hasn't worked with players that can improve or should improve a Liverpool team. He's worked with players that can improve Wolfsburg, worked with players with Wout Weghorst or the Matcha brothers. Very decent players, but not quite at that level. I've asked Christoph about this morning because he knows him really well. And he said, look, if somebody has an eye for talent and quality, the restriction is not that he doesn't know more quality when he sees it. It's the restriction's always been financial. Mm. So in his view, there's absolutely no reason why somebody who's got good eye for players for a certain budget will not be finding even better players for more budget. So I think we have to wait and see. I understand why Liverpool fans are not overly enthusiastic, because he doesn't come with a lot of hype. He doesn't come with, you know, having discovered Erling Haaland or Nkunku or, you know, these guys from the Red Bull group, or one or two players that everyone else has overlooked and they're now they're superstars. He hasn't really done that. He hasn't really worked that way. And because his persona isn't like one of those younger, very slick, very clever, very German, but very English proficient sporting directors, people perhaps don't get as excited about him. But I think, once again, we should maybe trust Klopp a little bit with his judgment, that he will find somebody who can do the job pretty well. He's not always, of course, right, and he makes plenty of mistakes, as everyone else does. But I think in this position, Klopp obviously feels sufficiently convinced by Schmadtke's personality and his qualities that he feels he can do a job, at least at the moment. Whether this is going to be a long-term solution, we don't know, and maybe they both of them don't know either at this point. But for somebody to come in and just help them get a few things done and over the line, they can probably do a lot worse than a really experienced operator like him.
Yeah, what's the mood, what's the feeling in Germany about Klopp after this season? Because obviously it's been a disappointing season overall. It might turn out great at the end if they enter the Champions League, which we've discussed that earlier. And, you know, we don't have the greatest hopes. But what's the perception of Klopp's season in Germany, Rafa?
Well, of course, people have noticed that Liverpool are not as good as they were last year when they were fighting on all fronts and very nearly had a historic season with a quadruple. As somebody like Didi Hamann has been very vocal and very critical, saying there's a spark missing, and sort of he was kind of intimating that massive changes needed to happen. Maybe even Klopp himself had outstayed his welcome. I don't think that is the general view. People watch from a distance and don't know the ins and outs, but I think most people in Germany, unless they're Schalke fans, still feel that the sun is shining from an opening of Klopp's body most of the time, and feel that he is still, you know, the superstar of German coaching, maybe of German football at the moment, the most prominent, most revered figure on the international stage.
But certainly, he's probably the most prominent German coach in football. But I was going to ask you about
maybe the most prominent German in the world.
Yeah, it's yes, a national treasure without a doubt. But I was going to ask you about someone who's always considered a treasure on Merseyside. Well, our part of Merseyside anyway, Xavi Alonso. And Leverkusen, they lost the first game since February on Friday night, and they won't finish in the top four. But he played alongside Steven Gerrard, and everyone looked at Steven and thought, well, you know, maybe once he went into management, he's the heir apparent to Klopp and, you know, eventually to come back to Liverpool. I've always thought Alonso was a more likely candidate to manage Liverpool. How's he getting on?
He's getting on really well. As you said, they probably won't qualify for the Champions League through the league position, but they are in the semi-finals of the Europa League, taking on Jose Mourinho's Roma. And if they make it to the final and win the final, then he's got a Champions League spot from a team that were 17th when he took them over. Now, they were in a false position, because this is a team that finished in the top four last season and should be in the mix. So a bounce was inevitable. But still, he has been so impressive with the way he has taken a very difficult dressing room, make them play as a unit, give them a tactical identity, although it's still sort of evolving. It used to be very defensive at the beginning. He used to sort out the defense, and now he's adding more and more elements of football. And because of his, I think, fairly unique combination of traits, he was an incredible player and still is on the training pitch playing with the players and showing off a little bit. his charisma, his persona, the guy is so charismatic, and, you know, when he's in a room, people kind of look up to him and just think, wow, you know, who's this guy? But also his background as a player for the best managers in the world. One of the few people who've experienced really all the greats, you know, both Pep and Jose. And to think of that and the combination and all the influences that he can tap into, I think he's got a superstar coach written all over him. And he was very, very smart, because Leverkusen was exactly the kind of place where you have real quality, and yes, there's a bit of pressure, but it's not the kind of place that go hysterical when you lose a couple of games and when you don't win anything in your first season. So again, really shrewd move to go there. And there's no wonder that after less than a full season in charge, he's already being mentioned as a possible candidate for really great things. I think he'll stay one more year at Leverkusen, but then I think we'll see him in the mix. Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, if they need a manager at that time, which I don't think they will, he'll be in hot demand because he's got... Yeah, he's got all these things that I just talked about, plus the international background. You know, he can speak English, he can speak Spanish, he can speak German. He's got it all, really.
You've just shut down my hopes. I thought he'd be eventually a Liverpool manager, but, you know, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, James, he's going on to bigger things than us, really, isn't he, by the looks of it?
Yeah, I think... I hope he does end up managing in the Premier League. I'm sure they'll have offers with the body of work that he's putting together. And I think he's been quite clever as well with the way that the way he's embarked on his journey into coaching. And obviously Sociedad B, wasn't it, initially? And as Rafa said, you know, picking, you know, the Leverkusen, where, you know, not too much glare and scrutiny, and continuing his kind of progression into coaching there. And I think he was always, when you meet players during their careers, you kind of get a feel, don't you, for who is likely to make that switch into coaching. And I remember when I was working at the Liverpool Echo, going across to Munich and having an hour with him doing an interview. And yeah, just such an intelligent, thoughtful guy. And, you know, when you marry that with, as Rafa said, when you look at the managers that he's played under, everything he will have learned from that, you know, played for the biggest clubs in the world, won the biggest trophies. Yeah, you just thought, yeah, this guy has got future manager written all over him, and he certainly started off pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk to people around the club, when Steven Gerrard was winning at Rangers, everyone was going, well, yeah, people, yeah, it's brilliant. We're made up for him. I didn't really see it coming. But, you know, when you talked about Alonso, everyone's like, yeah, we knew this was coming. Anyway, Rafa, thank you for joining us today. I think when it comes to national treasures, you're the second most important German behind Jürgen, of course. Well, we love you. Come back anytime, please.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Rafa.
Cheers.
This is Walk On, brought to you by The Athletic. This is Walk On from The Athletic with me, Tony Evans, and James Pearce. Well, James, I think we've got to have a bit of a love fest for Salah, haven't we? That's, I mean, he's just, what can you say about him?
Well, I mean, the numbers are just incredible, aren't they? Like, when I sat down yesterday morning and wrote the piece about him that's gone up on The Athletic today, and you... I think there is a danger you almost take him for granted and kind of, it's only when you go back through all the numbers, you think, this is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. This guy is like, it feels like every week there's another Salah related record that's been broken. And you think, you know, just on Saturday alone, you went, you know, first player in Liverpool's history was 131 years. No one's ever scored in 9 successive home games for Liverpool, you know, moving level with Steven Gerrard on 186 goals, joint fifth highest. You know, he's played 400 fewer games than Steven Gerrard. You know, 30 plus goals again in a season when he's been part of a massively malfunctioning team. Yet he's gone on this amazing run in the second half of the season, and we're talking about someone getting 30 goals again. I think, you know, what's he, the fourth Liverpool player ever to do that in 3 successive seasons after, you know, Rush, Hunt and Fowler, you know, not the worst company to be mentioned in. And then, I mean, the other thing which I think goes under the radar far too much is just his extraordinary durability. He just doesn't miss games, does he? I think he's sat out 120 minutes of the Premier League season so far. And that's like 4 times he's been hauled off, you know, given a breather late on in games. There was a game at Chelsea where he was rested and then brought off the bench. And apart from that, every single minute he's been out there. And when you think of the rough treatment he gets, I think from defenders and referees, to be honest, in terms of the lack of protection and the lack of free kicks. I mean, there's a crazy stat that I think there's 55 to 60 players in the Premier League who have had more free kicks awarded their way this season. But he's, yeah, I mean, what is it, 225 Premier League games? I checked that Liverpool have played since he arrived from Roma, and he's played in 215 of them, you know, 96%, which, you know, these are just, this is on a whole nother level. And, you know, that quality combined with this, like, amazing durability, you know, it's testament to how he leads his life. Klopp said it himself on the weekend. He's a machine.
He's just a phenomenon, isn't he? What are your favourite goals? Favourite goals is Anfield.
Do you know what? There's been so many to pick from. And I mean, the one against Manchester City was really special. The kind of the close control and, you know, the clinical finish past Edison from such a tight angle. But for me, it's the Chelsea one.
Salah! Astonishing! Like an arrow into the bullseye of the
That pile driver when he cutting off the right flank. And I think probably also because where we sit in the press box at Anfield, you're right behind it. And it was one of them incredible moments where, like, the second it left his boot, you were like, that is going straight into the top corner. More often you think of the iconic Salah goals being dribbles and cute finishes. But yeah, that's Chelsea one for me is my personal favourite.
Yeah, I mean, I like the one where he wriggled through the City defence.
He's done it again. Mo Salah. Still Salah.
Oh! It reminds me of Dalglish in 78 against United in the semi-final of the FA Cup. And just fantastic. I love that. But the other thing I don't think he gets enough credit for, James, is the goals he sets up for other people. And I mean, I'm always a bit wary of the assist thing, you know, which, the final pass to a player before he scores. Sometimes movement and running off the ball creates the space for them to score. But Salah just helps open up defences for everyone else so often, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's an element of his game that's developed massively over the course of his 6 years at Liverpool as well. Because there have been times, haven't there, where he's, you know, he's been accused of, you know, of backing himself too much at times and being, you know, strikers obviously always get accused of being greedy, don't they? But, you know, which is crazy in itself because which prolific goal scorer isn't greedy? You know, that's obviously got to be a pretty key part of your mindset to have that hunger to keep wanting to score time and time again. But it's about decision making as well. And he's got this incredible ability to see, you know, get a very clear picture in his mind. And more often than not, he does pick the right option. And you're right, you know, I think he's got 69 assists for Liverpool on top of those 186 goals, you know, 11 assists in all competitions this season. So it's, yeah, they're just crazy numbers. And you're right, it's not just the assists. It's also, you know, how often do we see him make a really intelligent run that then opens up space for Trent on that side or for Jordan Henderson? Obviously, he was a key part of those kind of triangles that they play on that right flank. So, yeah, he's just a complete footballer, isn't he?
Yeah. I can't help feeling, and, you know, we always say this, that he's still underrated. People don't give him the credit he deserves.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, Van Dijk and Klopp both touched upon that after the game against Brentford on Saturday, that, they were both right in terms of saying that I think maybe it's only after he's retired that people will think, oh my God, you know, wow. It gives you that perspective, because I don't think, I'd be absolutely amazed in my lifetime if I see someone again do what he's done, to score at the rate he has done year after year after year, you know, to have 186 goals in just under six seasons. You know, they are just stupid numbers. You know, I think his worst season for Liverpool was 23 goals, which is the kind of season at the top level most elite attackers, you know, Premier League attackers can only dream of scoring that many. So yeah, I don't think he gets the wider credit that he merits. You know, maybe there's a tinge of being, you know, unfortunate that a lot of his best years have still been around the kind of Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappe era, in terms of, you know, there's probably been moments when he's looked like he was going to break into that kind of wider conversation in terms of, you know, Ballon d'Ors and those kind of elite accolades. It hasn't quite happened, but no one's in any doubt at Anfield, are they? And I think he feels that love. And there was a nice quote from him after the game on Saturday, which said, you know, I'm just so happy here. It feels like home. It makes you wonder as well, like, how high he can actually go. Because when you look at the names above him in that all-time scorers list for Liverpool, you wouldn't back against him going past Billy Liddle. I think he's 42 goals behind him. You know, Gordon Hodgson's, 13 further down the road. Going to get past Liddle and Hodgson in the next 2 years? I think there's a good chance of that. And we'll be talking about when Salah does eventually walk away from Liverpool. You know, he'll be third on the all-time list behind Rush and Roger Hunt. And I do think that if he maintains the standards he's set and there's certainly no sign of him slowing down, he will be part of the conversation in terms of Liverpool's greatest ever player. You rank greatness, don't you, based on like longevity, loyalty, and glory, essentially. And he certainly ticks all those boxes.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, what'd be ideal is for him to go past the two of them next season and get some more glory. That would suit me. That'd be fine. And, you know, I'd be willing to hail him as the greatest ever. Anyway, that's all from Walk On, your Liverpool podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Thanks to James, Andy and Rafa, as well as you for joining us. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll see you then.
The Athletic.